Well, we've been very exercised with our own election, you know, all the logistics, the scale, the fact that we have an incredibly large ballot paper, larger than we've ever before. But, you know, India is on day 4 of their election. Now, you would think, okay, we ought to have results soon. I find this fascinating, by the way. They're on day 4 of the election, but get this, there's still another 38 to go. The election takes place over 6 weeks. There are 7 phases across the different states. There are electronic machines. The Election Commission of India, their equivalent of the IEC, deploys 15 million people to oversee the election. That's their size that they have to think have to provide. Very, very expensive elections, 12 billion British pounds. There are 969 million eligible voters. Now, think about this ballot paper, although I'm quite sure it's all split up in various ways. 2,600 political parties. It's absolutely fascinating, and I really would love at some point, we'll try and do it this week, to get somebody really well informed about democracy in India just to come in and spend some time telling us about an election there. But if you are from India or have lived in India or you may be listening in India, just call in and give us a sense of the scale of that democratic project. It is absolutely astonishing. And just to put this in perspective, when India goes to the polls, if everybody eligible went out to vote, which obviously they wouldn't, even so, 10% of the world's population would be voting in one election. Amazing numbers. So if you complain about how long everything takes here and how much it costs and everything, how many political parties there are, try India for size. 24 minutes past 3.
You're with John Perlman on 702.
Let's turn to one of the other stories prominent in that news bulletin a little bit earlier. 3 men arrested in connection with the killing of Rand Water executive Tebogo Dzwala and his bodyguard Sifiso Shange made their first appearance in the Lanesia Magistrates Court this morning. Dzwala and Shange were killed in January in front of a large number of primary school learners. They were making a contribution at a back-to-school event, I beg your pardon, all of this in Zakaria Park, south of Joburg, in the southern part of Johannesburg, should I say. Our reporter, Oren Singh, was at the court and joins us now. Oren, these appearances are generally quite short, but often there's stuff that we see that isn't part of the formal court proceedings. Summarize, first of all, what happened in the court today.
Very good afternoon, John. Very brief appearance today, as we've come to learn from first appearances. The 3 men, I think quite interesting, there was a large police presence and that of a tactical response team, TRT members carrying rifles. I counted about 10 people in court this morning.
Wow, okay.
John, that were there. All 3 of the accused were shackled at their ankles and they were ushered into the courtroom this morning. I think a question on, you know, a lot of people's lips, especially the family who are caught up with after court, who have taken the stance not to speak at this moment, given the sensitive nature of the case currently, is who are these guys? What we know from the charge sheet, John, is that they, at least 2 of them were arrested in northern KwaZulu-Natal. That's KwaNongoma and Pongola, respectively.
Right.
And police tracing them, Gauteng police that were working on the team, tracing them to KZN and making the arrest there last week. So who are they and what was the motive? That's the pertinent question here. Who wanted Mr. Dzwala killed and for what reason? We know that just prior to him being killed, he was given a VIP protector, as most Rand Water executives had been. But what was the exact motive? What was he involved in? Were there any discussions behind closed doors that were taking place that may have, you know, made him an enemy with someone? So those are the questions we're hoping to gain a little bit of insight into on the bail application on Monday.
Do we know anything about the counsel that the 3 men in the dock have? Is it legal aid? Have they got their own lawyers?
So interestingly enough, John, they have private prosecution or private legal representation. Accused 1 and accused 2 have the same defense attorney, and accused 3 has a separate defense attorney. So obviously these accused in this matter, these 3 men do have money to pay for legal representation and have opted not to take legal aid. But as we do see with many of these high profile murder cases, John, as it goes on, sometimes money runs out. And yes, sometimes it can be used as a delay tactic for them to opt to use legal aid at a later stage.
Yeah, so set it up to fail, and then, you know, you got to start all over again with new lawyers down the track. You mentioned, Oren, that the late Mr. Jwala did have personal protection, personal security, and you said that's quite common at Rand Water. Do you have any insight into that? Has that been going on for a while? Is it relatively new?
So what we initially did after the shooting, John, is we reached out to Rand Water, and some people, sources within Rand Water, said that many of the board or people within the board and executives at Rand Water had been given private security or private BIP protectors for about a couple of months prior to the shooting taking place. So obviously there had been threats, John, and Rand Water were aware of these threats. Usually when it happens with a state entity, that there are threats forthcoming to board members or so forth, a risk analysis needs to take place. And I'm sure Rand Water would have done a risk assessment, a threat assessment, and then as a result of that, issued certain executives with private VIP protectors.
Thanks very much to Oren Singh joining us here on 702 Drive. Any updates on that case? There may be something breaking later today, and we'll get Oren's thoughts about that a little bit later on the show, if indeed there is something to share.